This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
It's Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. I'm in the studio here with Travis Irvine, comedian, journalist, and some of you may know him for some physical comedy he's been doing over the years as John Kasep. You may have seen that on the internet. I like to think of it as kind of that Jerry Lewis, not so much you're imitating the voice, but particularly you're imitating the twitches.
Yeah, the twitches and the arm flops. And the scrunchy face and the hunched shoulders, the whole deal. Yeah, it was January 2014, the year of his re-election campaign, and this sketch comedy show I do in town. They were just like, "Hey, can you do a John Kasich?" And I was like, "I don't know." And I watched the video, and I was like, "Oh yeah, this won't be too hard." So,
were you worried he was going to throw you under the bus?
Who, Kasich?
Yeah.
Oh my God, he did. In a way, you know, in 2014, Ed Fitzgerald was such a disaster of a candidate for the Democrats, of course, causing a lot of people like myself to vote Green Party. Anita Rios, she did a great job. But
she had an incredible lieutenant governor candidate.
Yeah, I voted for that guy, too. Absolutely, yeah. I think I voted...
She got over 100,000 votes.
I know.
She did, very well.
Huge. That's huge. And, yeah, I think I voted for you a couple of times here and there. I even think we ran against each other in 2010 for the 12th congressional district,
because really?
I was the Libertarian candidate, and I think you were the Green candidate.
Oh, I think you won. Oh my God!
I don't know.
Cut this interview off right now.
I don't know if I got more votes than you or not, but anyway, so yeah, I ran a statewide pack against Kasich called Central Ohioans Countering Kasich, and the acronym is a fun, inappropriate acronym that you can't say on radio. But we were really happy with it. And, you know, Fitzgerald ended up being such a disaster of a candidate that by September we were actually ending up in the media more than Fitzgerald as the anti-Kasich voice. And I went to a Kasich rally wearing a hidden camera, hoping to do a little bit of expose journalism. And I was there for 7 minutes before I got a tap on my shoulder. And it looked like Doug Priest, but I don't know who it was exactly. It was one of Kasich's henchmen. They were like, "This
was
is
he
a
dressed really, really well."
He wasn't. That's why I don't think it was Doug Priest. Yeah,
Doug would look immaculate.
I
as
saw.
He threw you out.
Yeah, yeah. I saw
his
Doug.
His hair would be perfect. Kind of the werewolf of Columbus.
Yeah, right, right. I did. I saw Doug on the campaign trail with Kasich when we went to one of their events in the New York for the New York primary. And Doug did look fantastic. Montel Williams was also there, and I was there covering it for Vice. And these two guys in the audience did
as
a bit.
In, Vice that does the TV.
Yeah.
The
it well
all those FOIA requests.
Yes, technically I was there with Vice Land, which is their TV channel. So right now Vice News is an HBO thing, and Vice Land is an A&E partnership. So technically, I'm not supposed to cover the political news, but they're okay with me going and covering it from a wacky people-on-the-street angle. But Montel Williams was there, and there were two people in the crowd who did a bit with Montel Williams where they started arguing like they were on the Montel Williams show. And one guy started yelling about, "Hey, he's a Democrat. He's going around saying things about my family." And then the other guy's, "Hold on, I'm undecided." And Kasich's rally was almost ruined by this whole thing, and a priest was there, and I think he recognized me, and so I said, "Hello." It was all me. It was all my idea.
Yeah, I was reading somewhere on the web that they thought I was behind you doing this. For the record, had nothing to do with it.
That's great. Yeah, no, you had nothing to do with it.
Wish I had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Wish I could take credit. It's like the time the FBI thought I started Cop Watch. They maced me for it.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, so we know you as a comedian. Tell us about your work as a journalist.
Yeah, well, I graduated from
And that's Travis Irvine, who's telling us about his work as a journalist.
Absolutely. I went to Ohio University School of Communications, so the seeds were sown there.
The best school in the state, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, especially for journalism. And I love Athens. I love going down there. School of Communications.
There's a lot of hippies down there, though.
And hillbillies. And college kids. It's like the perfect mix of all these people.
Anti-authoritarian forces while we're talking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Students, hillbillies, and hippies.
Yeah. No, Athens is a special place. I really, you know, if I ever make it big, that's all I want to do is buy a farm down there and teach a summer course about alternative journalism or something like that. So I went there, and I trained with the TV, I trained with the radio, I did WOUB down there. I wrote for a little progressive newsletter called The Interactivist, and so that kind of sowed the seeds of everything, journalist-wise and even political-wise. I remember 2004, I was active with the John Kerry campaign in Athens. We were one of the only counties to go blue in 2004. Of course, you and I'm sure you probably got more to say about that, but I do remember Athens went blue and everything else seemed to go red that year. And then I drifted away from being a Democrat and a progressive to being more of like an independent progressive. Heard Ron Paul talking in 2007. I was like, well, an anti-war Republican, that's interesting. What's he? And then, like, well, he's a libertarian. So I've been kind of mixing progressive and libertarian politics, namely when I ran for mayor of Bexley.
And what year was that again?
That was 2007. And I remember the Central...
Which, you got the endorsement of both the Green and Libertarian Party.
Absolutely.
It was a nonpartisan position. And,
correct.
How in the hell did you do that?
You know, I reached out to both of you guys. Yeah. That's really the Franklin County Libertarians met with me and said, sure. And then I remember specifically, I don't remember what email I sent it to, but I remember I heard back from you guys like the weekend before the election. So I immediately put it on our new flyer, and then we just went all over Bexley with that. So that was political. That was journalism. But I upped the journalism ante in 2011. I ran against you at the congressional race, 12th District. In 2010, I ran as a libertarian. But after that, I upped the journalism ante by going to Columbia Journalism School, which, you know, a lot of people consider the best in the country.
And runs a great and famous review. We're talking to Travis Irvine here on the Other Side of the News. Did you get a degree from the legendary Columbia School of Journalism?
I did indeed, and I had some legendary professors. Victor Navasky of The Nation was one of my favorites.
We still wrote a very famous book, Naming Names.
Absolutely.
And that's why we know about T10.
Yes.
The snitch code word for Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Victor's a funny, funny guy. Yeah, you know, having a professor who's that good at journalism is one thing, but, you know, when I feel like I'm the smart ass in the room, and I say something I think is funny and people laugh, but then Victor Navasky says something even funnier that makes everybody laugh even harder. That was a special. That was worth the price of tuition, which I am still paying for, by the way. So yeah, since then I've been freelancing. I've done Huffington Post. I've done The Guardian. I've done and now I'm at Vice doing stuff with Vice Land. So
okay, how'd you survive at HuffPo?
They don't pay anything.
Harvey and I had a column there.
Oh, really?
Until it was sold, and then they never really ran anything we wrote ever again.
Oh, so were you guys?
Yeah, we had a regular column. It was. They wouldn't give either of us individually a column, but mm-hmm. Petragus Wasserman had a column there.
Yeah.
And everything we wrote, they post. Although a lot of it called into question the legitimacy of the American political system.
Right.
Kind of stuff that claims, you illegally knock off third parties and private vendors, get to secretly count votes. But once it was sold, we were gone. But
really?
We've done well on Reddit.
Oh, good.
And Truthdig and some of the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, you guys could probably fit in over at The Intercept, which is the new Glenn Greenwald.
They pick up a lot of our stuff, actually.
Yeah, I think, Yeah, you guys are, I mean, you're still doing great stuff. I think Huffington Post has just kind of gone more corporate, and I'm in the same boat where I'm a blogger, unpaid.
Well, what kind of stuff are you writing there? You don't seem like you write teen stuff.
I'm careful. I blend libertarian, progressive politics from the millennial perspective. So I kind of...
Okay, tell us what this millennial perspective is, Travis Irvine.
Well, the millennial perspective, I think, is honestly... It's a mix of progressive and libertarian politics. It's things like being anti-war. You know, we've seen the disastrous policy after 2001 with the war on terror, the invasion of Iraq. I think millennials are very much against anything else like that. It comes with from a pro-civil liberties angle, protection of the Fourth Amendment, being against the NSA, against restricting the Internet. It also includes socially liberal policies that libertarians and progressives agree on, legalizing pot, absolutely, leave it up to the states, or, you know, even just rescheduling it.
Well, they tend to agree on just about everything except the economy.
Economics, yeah, and then you talk about taxes, and that's where it gets more murky, but that's what I've always written for the Huffington Post. That's always my point, and it's like, well, look how nice it would be if the left and right, in my dream world, progressives and libertarians, could agree on these big issues like war and civil liberties and gay marriage and the drug war and private prisons and all these and crony capitalism,
so
and the Federal Reserve.
Drugs to be legalized?
I am fine without getting into a giant murky debate on legalization of all drugs. Yes, I do think that keeping that in the black market makes, you know, drives more criminal activity. Drugs are a health problem, not a criminal problem. So,
all right. Then, but how else could you get massive corruption and organized crime unless you took stuff that's relatively cheap, made it illegal, and thus boosted the profit rate?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. I don't know.
He admits he doesn't know.
That's
we're talking
beyond
to Travis Irvine.
That's beyond my millennial mind. I can't. I can't even imagine.
And what about the 40% inflated bounce in the stock market? Are you trying to destroy this economy?
You know, again, this is beyond my pay grade. I don't know. That's where I would, you know, get on the internet and see what Wasserman and Fitrakis are saying.
That's true, but we don't have that column in HuffPo anymore. And worse than that, the low point of my life is I lost my column at Columbus Live after 9/11 to the Meltdown Girls.
Oh,
who were the two bar hoppers.
Oh, geez, really? Well, Columbus Alive...
No, but on some level, it was perfect. Like, if I'd have lost it to some, like, corporate shill centrist,
yeah,
you know, who loved the Clintons, or, you know, who loved John Kasich,
yeah,
right? It would be... But instead, I lost it to the Meltdown Girls.
Yeah, right, right. No, I think, I mean, well, Columbus Alive... I mean, I have friends who used to work there, and Columbus Alive has been going that route for a while. They just want to kind of be the trendiest...
They got bought up by the Dispatch.
Dispatch, yeah. John Wolfe, rest in peace, of course.
Well, you got to understand that by buying everything up, I read their editorial, they were able to bring us more diverse thoughts through a wider range of mediums for us.
Right, right, right. I mean, I remember Columbus Alive also had a John Stewart column in there as well.
Right,
I don't even... I mean, that's... I mean, obviously he's gone, but they let go of all of that, I think, when the Dispatch took it over. And then the other paper folded. So you guys, Free Press,
and
you guys are the last...
And was bought up by the Dispatch.
They were too?
Yes.
And then they just folded it? That's what they...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
To bring us more diversity, they folded that.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, no, the Free Press, I mean, you guys are the last one standing. So, you know, more power to you. And you know, the next thing is, as long as you got that website, I mean, obviously having printed paper is good for a lot of readers. But it's good that you guys are on the web, so your stuff, yeah, like you said, can get on Reddit and beyond.
Yeah, freepress.org and columbusfreepress.com. What about your websites, Travis Irvine? Where can people go to read your accumulated work?
Well, I mean, I guess I've got a couple at this point. I mean, Viceland's YouTube channel, all my stuff ends up there for this year since I started working with them. The Guardian, you can look up just my name on the Guardian's website. And what I was working on the Guardian last year was actually kind of a fun project that I was really happy with. We were making funny climate change content. So I was producing, editing, being in videos, but also we had written stuff from comedians. The whole idea was to make climate change more of an approachable subject because it's so depressing if you actually look in the realities of it.
Now and then in the back pages of the New York Times, you wrote, climate change scientist has given up tenure and is walking the earth chanting because he thinks it's
actually more helpful. Yeah.
It's like, this is WCRS 98.3 and 102.1, your community radio station. I'm speaking with Travis Irvine. You may know him as a local comedian or national comedian doing John Kasich. He's got the moves down. And I'm thinking that physical humor of Jerry Lewis, except he does not say nice lady. But also a journalist and quite active lately. What have you done recently?
I mean, the recent stuff's definitely the Viceland stuff. We were covering the primary in New York. Viceland is not as worldwide and expansive as Vice News. You know, Vice News, they sent a millennial into an ISIS camp, you know, in Fallujah or something, and they tape it. They don't do that with me. So we only covered the 2016 race when it was in New York for the primary. And now we're working on figuring out what we're going to do in Cleveland, and we're working on what we're going to do in Philly, because the next month is going to be very interesting. Today was very interesting, too. I don't know when this will air, but this whole Hillary Clinton non-indictment, I think, is really, I don't know. It was very depressing for me.
Well, you know, if it was an average person, some grunt in the military,
mm-hmm.
some low-grade diplomat in the State Department, they would have been cuffed and in jail.
Right.
Because it's Hillary Clinton, I never expected that they would go after her. Although, they said there was no intent on her part, right? If you're using your personal server,
mm-hmm.
easily hackable, but and you've got, you know, top secret, confidential, classified documents
mm-hmm.
that you're exposing, you got to spend at least a weekend in jail someplace. You got to be cuffed for your own good, because it'll help you from being incredibly stupid in the future.
Right.
And normal people do jail time over those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, nothing else. They at least lose their security clearance
for a period of time. Right, I mean, look, I don't mind her being president. She just can't know anything, which would be better for the world because, as the New York Times pointed out, she's the biggest hawk that ran in this primary year so far, right? I mean, if you look at Hillary Clinton, she's a neocon.
Absolutely.
She's a PNAC-er. You know, she's responsible. Well, George W. Bush is responsible for the worst foreign policy blunder in history in attacking Iraq. She followed up in the Obama administration with the policy in Syria and getting rid of Gaddafi. That was like, let's get rid of a strong-armed dictator so we can have jihadists all over northern Africa. That's Hillary Clinton. And then she told she should be barred from office for telling the worst lie in history. The whole notion of some obscure tape badly made that was already on the internet somehow that inspired people. When in reality, those diplomats were torturing people in a U.S. compound. Extraordinary rendition. Mm-hmm. They were violating human rights. And that's why people rose up and killed them. And this Bob Tregus ranting in the presence of Travis Irvine.
For all your listeners, I am sitting here nodding my head emphatically because I'm just agreeing with everything. This is music to my ears. Hillary. I mean, you know, from voting for Iraq to Libya, Obama. This is what gets me. Obama says Libya was the biggest mistake of his presidency, and there he is today, sitting behind her in North Carolina, doing the whole chuckling, campaigning for her, talking about how fun Hillary is and how smart she is, and it's just
for a war criminal.
I mean, today,
a human rights violator.
Yeah, today I think proved, you know, once again what I think Americans already knew is that there's a set of rules for the political elites and in Washington and the economic elites, and then there's rules for the rest of us. And I really just, I wonder when it's going to be too much to take anymore. I mean, at what point do people break? I mean, this is, I mean, I don't know, is this...
Well, sadly, I think part of the break is Trump, and Trump being, you know, so close to Clinton... Mm-hmm. is more a reflection to me of people
right.
breaking and realizing the empire is collapsing around us.
Oh, you think so? I mean, because I feel the oligarchy...
It's right-wing populism, mm-hmm. but if you look at the left-wing populism, I mean, there was enough people in motion to cause real change in the country, mm-hmm. and now they're trying to kind of say it's okay, you know, we're going to work you in a little... But again, I personally would not vote for Hillary Clinton because I consider criminals allowed her to win the primary.
Right.
Harvey and I have a book out called The Strip and Flip Selection of 2016. They systematically purged Sanders voters
right.
from the voting rolls in states like Arizona.
New York as
New
well.
New York. 160,000 or so in Brooklyn.
Not to mention
and in California, open theft.
Really? Yeah, well, because it's such a slow count. And now the count's finally turning, you know, Bernie's turning counties all around California, but now it's not in the news, you know?
No, and then her friends at the AP, right?
Yeah.
Who, right before the election, decide suddenly they can count, and she already won.
Yeah.
And then she starts with this 20 percentage point bump in delegates based on buying up local state and political parties.
Absolutely. And then that's all in addition to the closed primary process where there were 3 million independents in New York who probably would have loved to have voted for Bernie Sanders, but they weren't allowed. I mean, that's what's so fascinating to me is that there's the systemic stuff that's out, you know, out in the open, and then there's the strip and flip stuff that's more secretive that you guys specialize in. And there's just like there's no way to win. It's very disheartening, you know. This is, I think, why most of my millennial counterparts just drink a PBR and go listen to Mumford and Sons on the weekends, and you know they don't really. It's hard for them to care because it's eventually like. It's a rigged system. How do we win?
I don't know. All I know is, what do you have? Old-time flavor. Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. So I understand the Pabst Blue Ribbon beer. But they've got to get up, stand up for the rights. And I think you're urging them to do that. Do you do a lot of calls for action or more of investigative journalism, Travis Irvine?
A little bit of both. I mean, Huffington Post, I've been pretty lucky there because a lot of the pro-Bernie stuff I write gets a bunch of shares and a bunch of likes on social media and things like that. And so, you know, I will say I diss my millennial counterparts a little bit here and there because I do question. But I will say Bernie Sanders did a hell of a job of waking a lot of people up. I would even say millennials younger than me, you know, these kids who are like just in college right now and seeing this college debt pile up in front of their eyes, you know, I think that's a wake-up call right there that the world you live in is not on your side. You know, when 20-year-old, 22-year-olds are getting out of college with a degree they can't use and a job they can't get, and then they got this debt that's piling up with interest rates that Republicans and Democrats vote to keep very high and artificially high so they can make an extra coin off these students.
But you've got to admit, just because every democracy in Western Europe except England can send the students to school for free, we can't do it. That would be impossible mm-hmm. because we have to have the highest military spending on Earth. There's 181 countries we need to have troops in. Right. Wouldn't you agree, Travis Irvine?
I would recognize your sarcasm, and I agree with your sarcasm. That was always the biggest issue that I talked about running as a libertarian, and it's another great area where progressives and libertarians can agree. We spend $800 billion. I think maybe it's where is it now? Is it $800 billion on the military
yeah,
every year?
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
And it depends on how you caught it, because we shouldn't count, obviously, veterans' benefits
right.
from previous wars, That's Health and Human Service, because you start counting that mm-hmm. and the money borrowed on the debt, you're yeah. really talking, you know, well over a trillion one, a trillion two
right.
yearly deficit. And then, so we've actually learned to count it, so things that are obviously military mm-hmm. don't count as military anymore, like vets benefits.
Right, and even the dark budgets of the intelligence communities and the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, this is all part of the giant United States military apparatus. And I thought Bernie Sanders did an excellent job of calling it out, where it's just like, well, of course, these countries like England and France, of course they can provide cheap health care and cheap college because they're not spending that amount of money on their militaries. And even the United States is paying.
Would you be willing to admit we really need it? Because if you look at a map, I mean, it's not like we have a friendly ocean on either side of us, east and west, and two friendly countries that we're in a trade zone with on the north and south. I mean, we are in the middle of the stuff, are we not?
Oh, well, I'm gonna recognize your sarcasm one more time, and I'm going to agree with your sarcasm.
I mean, how do they sell that stuff?
I don't know.
You're a comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't there a certain absurdity to it all? I mean...
Yeah. No, it's ludicrous. And, you know, you even got the Pentagon saying, hey, we don't need these air carriers, and we don't need these bases in these countries, or these bases even in you know...
But crony capitalists do they not?
Yeah, they're all crony. I mean, this is just straight up, you know, a congressional district needs the jobs for Boeing or whatever, and so the congressmen want to keep that money train flowing. I mean... The United States, I love that documentary, what's it called, Why We Fight, by Jarecki. And it's just a fantastic analysis of how the military-industrial complex rooted itself in since World War II and with mm-hmm. Eisenhower. Eisenhower, of course, saying, God help the next man who sits behind this desk, or woman, I guess, who knows less about the military than I do. And, you know, we've been a military...
As you warned about the military-industrial complex. Unwarranted influence by,
yeah.
as you said, the military-industrial complex, Travis Irvine, comedian, journalist, and provocateur. In the old days, we could unleash COINTELPRO on them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, now they just got Facebook, so they can just watch me see all my thoughts on there.
Well, they've got PRISM. And I haven't asked you about this, but perhaps it could help you, like, because they keep track of your keystrokes that you erase, right? If you need that for your writing. And I'm thinking we should get some tax benefit. Like, I lose my car keys a lot. I'm getting older.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't you be able to call up the NSA and say,
hey,
where the hell are my car keys?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they would be. They could actually do us all a service. You know, just be like, hey, what's my ex-girlfriend up to? Who's she texting? Absolutely.
So, part of it, let's see if we can get a count from the producer and fingers. Oh, we're... almost out of time. What do you want to tell the listeners, Travis?
Well, you know, we've talked about a lot of important things and a lot of depressing things. This is one of the reasons I turned to humor, because you can always... You're right, it's very absurd. Some of my favorite humor stuff that I ever read was from World War One. The comedy that came out of World War One, where, you know, that was the height of absurdity, where you're sending 60,000 young men into machine guns and they die in 20 minutes. You gotta have a sense of humor about all this crap, and so I'm just gonna keep doing that. I'm gonna keep doing it with journalism, but it's, you know, you also gotta raise awareness and show people how you're getting screwed. But that's the beautiful thing about satire. It's a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Thank you, Travis Irvine, comedian. It's Bob Fitragus from the other side of the news.